It's time to catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign. And Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I am pleased to welcome to this week's show E. Ainsley, an artist and papermaker, sculptor and printmaker, who I met at a street fair in Urbana. And the art paper you made at Fresh Press, E., caught my attention with its textures and patterns and colors. How to lead off about paper? Paper surrounds us. You know, we use it without thinking. So choosing the importance of using just the right paper for any task, from writing a grocery list to journaling to choosing a beautiful texture and color for wrapping a gift or for creating a piece of art. And then there's the world of making paper. And we in Champaign-Urbana have a remarkable resource on this campus, Fresh Press, which is a laboratory for making paper that partners with the Student Sustainable Farm. It's a project of the University of Illinois' Art and Design Department under the direction of Professor Eric Benson. And part of your role, E, in this community is as the studio manager of Fresh Press. Now I offer a bit of audio to set the tone for papermaking that I recorded at a visit with E. Ainsley at Fresh Press, filling the vat with water, mixing the pulp, and dipping the mold and deckle. Let's take it to your background before that. Tell us about your life with paper and how you found your way to papermaking.
Yeah, thank you. That was a great narrative introduction. I have always been making sculptures and pushing sculptural materials. And for a while, I was using paper that already existed and chipboard and trying to like wet it a little and bend it and tape it together and making small sculptures with paper, but it wasn't handmade by me. And then in 2018, I was still living in Portland, Oregon, which is where I lived before I moved here for grad school at U of I. I got invited to a residency at Pulp and Deckle, which is run by a master papermaker, Jen Woodward. And so that summer before I came here for grad school, I had a crash course in papermaking. I learned how to use a beater. I learned how to process egg cartons first. And then from egg cartons, I went on to cotton and learned probably like three or four different really integral techniques. So the residency was propose a project, and they really wanted artists who had not worked in paper yet. So I was taught how to make paper in order to complete this self-portrait as a cone, is what it is. It was a 5'4" traffic cone made out of bright orange duck cloth, which is cotton, like really strong cotton. So, and then the base was denim. So I thought it was kind of funny, like a t-shirt and jeans kind of traffic cone. And that's one of the first big projects I made out of paper. Then I moved here thinking like, that was cool. I'm so glad that I know how to do that. I'm not sure when I'll get to do that again. And then I gave my quickie 5-minute presentation as a new grad student, as we all did. And afterwards, Eric Benson approached me and suggested I do an independent study with Fresh Press. And I hadn't even seen the facility as part of my campus visit tour. So I was kind of blown away by it. And I've been here in some capacity ever since.
Talk about how you worked with Fresh Press, both as a student and then becoming part of its workshops. It offers workshops to people in the community, to students. Mm-hmm. It makes paper for Skewamorph Press, for presses on campus. It's quite remarkable that Fresh Press makes production quality paper. How did you ease in? What did you first do?
Well, I had the independent study, which allowed me access to the space. And then after that semester was over, I just kept being in the space. Not a whole lot was going on at the time. Like, I think the former studio manager, Veronica Pham, had just started to do workshop, have Fresh Press be part of Boneyard Festival. Keep in mind that during my 3-year degree from 18 to 21, the lockdown for the pandemic happened in the middle. So any sort of momentum that was happening at Fresh Press in like a public offering completely shut down. So I was here a lot alone, experimenting deeply, reading books and just kind of like seeing how I could push paper and then keeping in touch with other paper makers around North America and in Canada to see like what people were up to. So I think that's how I expanded my practice, is mostly like experimentation and other paper makers' kindness and excitement. So yeah, I graduated and then I started working on a flower farm. So still involved with plants, but I thought I had said goodbye to Fresh Press. Then Eric reached out to me because the conservation library on campus was in the middle of a grant-funded research project for making sustainable case paper out of local agriculture fibers. So I was hired to make the paper recipes for that project. And while I was working on that part-time and working on the farm, I started looking for other grants that might support me to stay at Fresh Press. And I found through the National Endowment for the Arts and Arts Midwest, there was this grant that would hire an artist to teach workshops to marginalized communities. So that's where I started stepping in as more of like a studio manager and workshop teacher, is because we got the grant and I was able to offer donation-based workshops for teaching local queers cast paper making. So that's been kind of my really exciting thing that I like to offer people over and over again, is these workshops on bringing in a treasured item, learning how to use silicone to make a mold of that item, and then learning how to use paper to cast a replica of that treasured item. And then, like, yeah, the rest is just constantly trying to fund my position every semester while also just absolutely being in love with paper. I feel like it's the thing that it's like the missing link, or like the magical third thing that my practice needed.
Were you using it more as a sculpture rather than a substrate, something that you paint on or write on at that point?
Yeah, I use it as both. I like to go back and forth. I mean, I love to pull sheets and just get into the rhythm of having like really nice, even, clean, beautiful sheets of paper, and then like collaging with them or on them or making stationery. I do like make a lot of stationery, and I just love analog things. I think it's really important to keep your finger on the pulse of analog creativity, especially right now. I do a lot of casting paper, not only with silicone molds, but also I carve into foam with a hot knife. And also, after I graduated, I met the local artist, Bob Chapman. That was great because he's been making paper for as long as I've been alive. And he showed me all these other ways that you can cast paper, and I feel like that connection has really pushed me in new directions I don't think I would have experimented with. It's nice to have someone older who's been through more, not just art experiences, but life in general. So he can be like, I remember we were in the studio together and he's like, loosen up, just loosen up. Like, what do you have to lose? And I'm all like very regimented in this way, and he just encouraged me to like let loose a little. So
What about the materials that you use for making paper?
my favorite thing to use is thrifted bed sheets. When I first moved here from Portland, I was pretty flabbergasted by the terrain. I've always been a coastal person, if not in the Pacific Northwest than in the Gulf Coast of Florida. And it was just so flat here, and the flatness didn't eventually lead to an ocean. So I was sad. And I was also going through a breakup. So I would just like go through thrift stores and look through and try to find old bed sheets, because for me, the bed sheets were holding like other people's sweat and tears and dreams and sex. And there's something about it that I was like, let me get these bed sheets. Let me process these. So I cooked them and then beat them. And after about 4 or 5 hours, I finally have the pulp that I need. And I started making mountains, pretty large scale sculptures. I think they were like maybe 7 foot by 4 foot, and I would suspend them from the ceiling. So these cascading mountainscapes that also looked very soft. Sometimes the feedback I got is that it just looked like a cloth, like draped over a few bodies or something. I just think that the history and the materials is really important and can feed into the narrative in ways that other ways of making aren't pulling directly on that history as much as like fibers, for example. I also like using bed sheets because it's a found object for me. It's like part of the hunt, part of like the drifting around and seeing what you can find to work with. And then, of course, the agricultural fibers that I learned to use by working at Fresh Press. So the big one is miscanthus. I use miscanthus a lot. So it makes a really nice, like soft, light tan paper. And I think that it's kind of poetic to use that one too, because now I'm tying in like the space within which we live with also like the bed sheets that have their story. This time last year, a friend of mine who teaches elementary school gave me a huge box of children's drawings that were left behind after the semester. And I cut those up after going through them, mind you, and taking out my favorites. I processed those into pulp, and then I was inspired by one of the drawings. And so that's what you see behind me here, this family portrait with the stick figures. It's myself and my partner and our dog, Moxie, who lived to be 18. And we just said goodbye to her like a month and a half ago. She was a Chihuahua. And in this piece, she's like almost the same size as the stick figures that represent us. So it's like this funny shift in scale that was inspired by like two stick figures holding hands in this children's drawing. And the whole thing is cast paper made out of the children's drawings. So I feel like I'm letting whatever was put into those drawings live on through this new shape and narrative.
Talk a little bit about the quality of fiber that is best for making paper. Why bed sheets, are these primarily cotton that you're talking about, or are they all different kinds of fibers?
For bed sheets, I need 100% cotton or 100% linen. No poly blends, no blend of any sort. Plastic doesn't work. And also, it needs to be a plant fiber and not an animal fiber. Like, you can't, wool is its whole other type of fiber that has its own process.
Talk a little bit about the process. What do you actually do? Say you have a load of miscanthus off the sustainable farm. What happens next?
So you pull it out of the ground and then you chip it down so that it's like maybe an inch long, little like chipped pieces of the grass. Then we get that over here, cook it. We want to cook it down with soda ash so we can neutralize the pH. The cooking also starts to open up the fibers, because what's happening in paper making is that the cellulose, the methyl cellulose, is the adhesive that holds everything together. If you think about like wheat paste, you know, just mix in some water with wheat and like smack it up on a wall and put a poster on it. That's the glue that is inherent in all of these fibers. So when you cook it, the fibers open up a little bit. The soda ash helps neutralize the pH. After it's done cooking, rinse it out, rinse the soda ash out of it because it's a little slippery and bubbly. So you want to rinse it like a good 4 or 5 times. And then we take it into a Hollander beater, which is like a water wheel of blades that also has a plate bed underneath the water wheel that has blades. So it's like blades on blades circulating with water. and the water and cooked fibers are going through in like this almost like an elliptical, like a squished oval. So it's going around this machine, and you can like lower the wheel towards the plate bed. As the fibers open up more, you want to make the space between the wheel and the plate bed smaller and smaller because the fibers are getting softer and softer. And it's not grinding, it's kind of like macerating. And it's not blending either. Although you can use a blender if you just want to make paper at home out of like junk mail. So the beater's going around, and let's say I just want to make a standard batch of Miscanthus sheets. I would cook for 2.5 hours, beat for probably 2 hours. So already with like clean up and prep, we're probably like 5 hours in before we actually have it in the vat ready to pull sheets. The fibers are opening up as it's beating, and then the fibrils, the like microscopic fibers, are opening up, and that's when the methyl cellulose is really like available to be used in this process. So when it's done in the beater, most of the time we add sizing, which helps the paper reject moisture. It's a ketene dimer solution. Forget what exactly that's made out of right now. We put it in, and it makes it so that if you use a marker or paint or ink, that it doesn't bleed on the sheet. All of our paper has sizing. Sometimes I don't use it when I'm using my sculptures because I think it's unnecessary. So we've got the beaten pulp with the sizing in it, and we put it in a vat. We use a mold and a deckle. The deckle is like a frame, like a picture frame, and the mold is like a mesh flat rectangle sieve or something. So you've got them both together, you drop them into the water that has the pulp in it, and you pull it out to pull your sheet. You let it drain, take the deckle off, and then couch your sheet, which is laying it down on some pelon or felt. After you build your post, which is couching several sheets on top of each other, you then put it in the press to press the water out, and then transfer the pressed sheets into a dry box. And then the dry box puts it under pressure once more as it rests between some blotter papers. And there's a fan on the back of the dry box. And I'd say in about 12 hours, you've got a dry sheet. I guess 5 hours roughly to process, 12 hours to dry, depending on how many sheets you want to pull. Maybe it's like a 2 hour studio session. Very analog, very meditative. Don't try to rush these things. I have. And then it's just kind of messy and mediocre.
There's such a magic about how a sheet of paper forms and how the fibers align on the mold and deckle, and that's what's important about the material that makes up the pulp, is that the fibers need to be long enough that they bond together, they form. And paper has a tremendous personality. It has a tremendous strength. And I've done some paper making myself, and I've always loved the process of seeing how a sheet of paper forms and is unique. Because once the water is drying, the sheet really becomes an integral material that is strong.
Well, I love that you said magic. That's where I'm at, and that's, I think, where a lot of contemporary paper makers are. I think that's what keeps us pulling into it, because it's strong, it's delicate, it's ubiquitous, it's rare, like it's existing. It can be lots of different things. And I think that that can teach us something in this world of exceedingly intense binaries that are put on us, you know?
And you can put things into a sheet of paper. You can put flowers, leaves, all
Seeds,
kinds
and
of.
then can plant the sheet of paper. You can give someone stationery that has a love note on it, and then they can go outside and put that sheet in the ground and water it, and flowers can come out if you embed the seeds well.
Your art papers that you make are remarkable. The one I'm thinking of immediately is like a checkerboard of very vivid patterns that I don't know how you do it, but you create remarkable patterns and colors in some of the paper you make. How does that inspiration come to you?
I'm kind of a color junkie for sure. I love my neons. Obviously, I've talked about traffic cones. I don't know. I mean, I was like raised partially in Florida for a while, so I think like Florida in the 90s, like I think these colors are sticking with me. So, but as far as like bringing them into paper, I think a couple summers ago I learned how to overbeat the fibers, and that means that you bring the wheel down to zero, so there's like barely any room between the bed plate and the wheel of the beater. And mind you, it starts at 30, and normally you bring it down to like 2 to do a regular amount of paper for like making sheets. It's called pulp paint or overbeaten fiber, and pretty much it just turns the fiber into dust. And because it's so small, it has the ability to soak up more pigment. So pulp paint is what I use to make those grids. That's why the colors are so much more vibrant and rich. So I put down a base sheet of regular, let's just say cotton or miscanthus, and then I use mylar that I've cut out a stencil, and I lay the mylar on top of the wet sheet, and then use like squirt bottles or spray bottles that has the pulp paint in it to get that out there over the stencil.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. And that's where Bob told me to loosen up, because I was going in and like squirting the pulp paint in each little square for a while. And he was like, what if you just squirted it like crazy on top and then like took a squeegee and moved it around? And that really opened things up for me. So now sometimes some of them look like marbled, some of them look like petri dishes. Yeah, that was a really great time. I can't believe that was already 2 summers ago.
There's an artist in residence program at Fresh Press, right? Who comes to that and what do they do?
I really want to work with other paper makers, and people reach out a lot through the website and ask if there's an artist residency. So last fall, I was talking to Eric and I was like, why don't we just have someone come and work with me for a week or two? So we had Molly Bergson from Chicago came down, and she had had already some training at Women's Studio Workshop. So she knew how to use the Hollander beater, and that was great because that training alone takes a few days. It's not complicated, it's just a lot of nuance and also a very important machine. And if it breaks, I'm probably gonna try to fix it. And that'll probably take longer than I'd like. Molly came down last October, and we had her here for just shy of 2 weeks. And then we had like an open house where she was doing really cool stuff. What is offered is time working in the studio with me. What I wish we could offer is some sort of artist stipend. I think that like a free residency with the fibers and the labor of assistance is pretty good. In a dream world, I would love to give people funds for them to like stay, you know, because that's the biggest part that seems to be a challenge. I mean, I'm a working artist myself, like I know what it's like. I think our residency has been pretty great. I mean, for me, I've got people coming in the studio and we work together and share ideas. I get to teach people in a way that is outside of the classroom. So I feel a little more liberated that I don't, you know, I'm not like giving a grade or like having a syllabus or taking attendance. At a residency, you know, creativity can be more fluid and less regimented. It's been pretty great because I'm able to work here for another year. There's 3 people lined up coming in for like about 10 days each, starting at the end of September. It can be anywhere from like learning how to make paper, or you know how to make paper and don't have access to these types of resources, like, you know, the beater, the press, the dry box, the time and space.
You're at the South Farms in one of the studios there, a big space, because you need a lot of space to make paper.
We're in pole barns in a field. It's an agricultural university. I mean, our space is great. I had this artist, Nicole Malcolm, come from Kent State in March, and she's a paper maker through and through. So that was more like really intense skill sharing back and forth. And I did teach her how to use some stenciling techniques, but I learned from her just as well. And she was remarking on how big the space is that we have here. because she could just like spread out. At Kent State, there's like other people working at the same time and you have to share the space, much more like a printmaking lab. I like that too. I mean, that's part of why I initiated this artist in residence program, is because I want more people working in here together. And that's something that doesn't happen because there aren't papermaking classes at the U of I. I think it's been really great offering the free or donation-based classes for queers, because it brings in people who are creative in their lives and have maybe like not had the time for it or don't want to enroll in like a whole class to do something. And every time I have these folks in here, you know, they range in age from like mid-20s to mid-40s. And we all come and hang out for like 3 hours and from start to finish do a whole sculpture. And then they can leave and have this mold to work with again. It's just like really cozy and fun and funny. And I think paper is accessible. Like you can buy a dumpy blender at Goodwill and figure it out yourself at home, or you can have state-of-the-art equipment like there is at Fresh Press and do all sorts of other really fun things. This fall, I'm going to Montreal to visit this papermaker, Sophie. She runs a papermaking production that uses cast-offs from the garment industry, so like cotton and everything, and has her whole business. So I'm going to go there for a residency and learn how to make milkweed paper, and hopefully I can bring that knowledge back here and share it with other people.
Well, that's about all the time we have. Thank you, E. This is delightful to get to learn more about your world and what happens in your studio. And I encourage people to keep your eye open and just go to the Fresh Press website and see if there's some way you can go and see what the whole situation is like.
Thank you so much for having me. Definitely keep an eye on the website. Like I said, I'll be here again for the next year, but we're still working on relaunching our offerings. I don't have the dates for workshops yet, but either Fresh Press on Instagram or freshpress.studio is our website.
That wraps up our time for this week's Catch the Beat. I give a hearty thanks to E. Ainslie for their time, enthusiasm, and expertise in describing their life in art and papermaking in the paper lab of Fresh Press on campus at the University of Illinois. You can see a sampling of E's work on their website, eainslie.com, that's E-A-I-N-S-L-E-Y, and read about the work of Fresh Press at their website, www.freshpress.studio. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org. All episodes of Catch the Beat are archived on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod, see you next time.